Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Boys Life magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article today is entitled Finding Their Way, and it has a big picture on beginning here on pages 26 of a young boy on a limb on a tree, and then with a big, big hole in his trousers, and then another young scout running through the woods. Let's begin with the article. Orienteering isn't for wimps. Courses can be loaded with tough obstacles, steep hills, deep gullies, uneven terrain, prickly brambles, poison oak, cold wind, and cows. That's what the guide from Troop 109 of Menlo Park, California, encountered at the Bay Area Scout Orienteering Scout O Championships in October. Held at Briones Regional Park in Martinez, California, the competition involved about 35 BSA units. There was a thistle attack, Star Scout Daniel Coppett says, and then there was the cows. I got 1 foot away and they wouldn't move. I didn't know if they were going to attack. Fortunately, they weren't attacking cattle. Champ help. Also fortunately, Troop 109 had the Coppish brothers on their side. Twins Daniel and Philip, 15, are national champions at orienteering, a sport that is like cross-country running except there is no marked course to follow. The Coppish brothers are a really big help, first-class scout Kendall Lee, 12, says. Before events, we go out on courses and they help us learn how to use a compass, orient a map, and know what to look for. Any expert help you can get with the challenge of orienteering is a big plus. It isn't easy to use a compass and map to quickly navigate through terrain from control point to control point. It takes sharp mental skills and physical strength and speed. If you're good at math and puzzle solving, you can be good at orienteering, Daniel says. Cross country is also a good foundation, Philip adds. Scout O, we go. The Bay Area Scout O meet included two events. In the morning event, scouts competed in pairs on three courses with different levels of difficulty. On the advanced course, which the Coppish brothers did, participants competed individually. After a staggered start, each pair or individual visited control points along their course in a designated order, and this was 21st century orienteering. Instead of punching a card, competitors carried small devices called e-sticks that they inserted in an electronic box at each control. This electronic punch recorded the control number and time of visit in each e-stick. Turns out there were lots of challenges for Troop 109. A tree had fallen across the trail and we had to climb through it, first-class scout Jonathan Adams, 14, says. We came close to getting lost, but didn't. We took shortcuts and got lost at two controls. Star Scout Taylor Tam, 14, admits, the biggest obstacle to me was the weather. It's pretty cold. I got hit about 12 times running through those spiky plants, Star Scout Matt Tigno, 14, says. Obstacles or not, Troop 109 prevailed. They won the troop competition with the most course points. Plus, Jonathan Adams and Thatcher Freeman, 11, placed third as a team on course two. Not too shabby for having to tackle that fallen tree. Score O, we go. In the afternoon, Score O event individuals raced to as many controls as possible in 75 minutes. The controls are worth different amounts of points, depending on their difficulty. Competitors can hit the controls in any order, and the guy with the most points wins. Before gathering for the mass start, Troop 109 strategizes with the course map. Find a good route, Philip says. Also, keep an eye on the time so you have enough time to get back to the finish. Good advice. There is a point penalty for each minute over. The scouts set their watch alarm for 50 minutes so they can get back in time for any point on the course. Then they're off. Both Coppish brothers hit all the controls, with Philip finishing with 27 minutes left and Daniel with 25. Combining these scores with their morning scores, Daniel is declared the 2009 Bay Area Scout Orienteering Champ. It's his turn. Philip was the 2008 champ. As a bonus, their dad, Manfred, won the day's adult competition. Troop 109 won't soon forget the day's challenges. I don't even try to take the prickles off my shoes, Daniel says. They're everywhere. I just keep them as souvenirs. And the guys are glad to come in from the cold. As Tenderfoot Scout Ben Leonard 12 puts it, now is time to defrost. And they have a picture of Cub Scouts running on the course. Some champion tips. The Coppedge brothers offer these orienteering tips. Always stay in contact with the map, keeping your thumb on the map where you are. That way you don't have to take time to relocate yourself. When you get lost, stop and figure it out. Then backtrack to your last known location. Don't rush. If you make a mistake, running faster will only lead to more mistakes. Keep a balance between navigation and running. If the course is short and terrain not too rough, you don't have to take the most precise bearings. Take a rough bearing and then follow map details. Stick with precise bearings when you do take them. Get back in line with your bearings after dealing with obstacles. Aiming off is useful if there are big obstacles between you and your destination. Set a bearing and aim off a distinct landmark near your target. Then find your way to your target from there. Use catching features, landmarks on the map that are beyond your destination. If you encounter them, you know you've gone too far. Duct tape shoelace loops together. Triple knotting doesn't cut it. For more orienteering basics, check out the Orienteering Merit Badge pamphlet. Now let's find out a little more about these young brothers, Coppedge brothers. Here's their file. Their birth date is September 18, 1994. Remember, they're twins. Hometown, Menlo Park, California. Scout rank, Star Scout, Troop 109, Menlo Park. Besides orienteering and cross-country running, Daniel enjoys anything outdoors. He plays the guitar, runs track, and Philip enjoys backpacking, camping, fly tying, and fishing. They started orienteering. When we were in diapers, Daniel says, Dad put us in strollers to go out. Their first wins. Daniel won the Bay Area Orienteering Club Championship at age 10 and Philip at age 11. Orienteering competition highlights. 2009 U.S. Orienteering Championships. Philip placed second and Daniel third in their age category. In 2009 U.S. Interscholastic Orienteering Championships at West Point, the team placed third out of 60. In 2008 U.S. Orienteering Championships, Daniel placed first and Philip third in their age category. In the 2007 U.S. Ski Orienteering Championships, Philip placed first and Daniel second in their age category. A weird bonus. The guys have a collection of antlers from different courses. I've even found antlers attached to a skull, Philip says. Well, have you ever wondered what it takes to be an Eagle Scout? Well, let's find out. Let's go to pages 34 through 39. The Trail to Eagle. All good Eagle Scout projects start with a good idea, so be prepared. You never know when inspiration will strike. Ideas for great Eagle Scout service projects can come just about any time. For Life Scout T.J. Decker of Troop 446 in Scottsdale, Arizona, inspiration arrived a couple of days after he watched the movie Flags of Our Fathers. The film depicts one of the most dramatic moments of World War II. Five Marines and a Navy sailor raising a U.S. flag on the island of Iwo Jima in the middle of a fierce battle in 1945. By raising the flag, the men showed that U.S. forces finally had taken control of the island in the Pacific Ocean. One of the Marines was Ira Hayes, a Pima Indian who lived most of his life in the Gila River Indian community near T.J.'s hometown before he died in 1955. T.J. was intrigued by his life story. I thought, oh, that's cool. He's from Arizona, he says. T.J. and his dad visited Hayes' hometown nearby Bapchule, Arizona, to learn more about him and to see what kind of memorial was in place, recognizing a need. Once there, T.J. discovered there wasn't any formal recognition for Hayes. The only memento he found was a small display in a library at an elementary school. So he decided to create a more fitting memorial for the real-life hero. T.J. discussed the idea with the principal at the St. Peter Indian Mission School in Bapchule. She loved the idea and asked him to consider doing something with a partially built garden at the school. T.J. decided to finish the garden and make it a memorial to Hayes. He rounded up 53 volunteers, mostly from his scout troop and from his school. They hauled off 80 wheelbarrow loads of rocks, installed an irrigation system, planted rows of vegetables, completed 3 partially constructed walls, and erected a large engraved flagstone monument in tribute to Hayes. The guys wanted to use traditional Pima Indian construction techniques on the walls, so they started by mixing gobs of adobe, which is made of dirt, straw, and water. A couple of weeds even got into the mixture, but for adobe, that's okay. When adobe is wet, it looks and feels like mud. The guys caked it onto a framework made of wooden rib from saguaro cactuses. When the adobe walls dried and hardened, they painted them with the whitewash. A long-term memorial. Months before the work began, T.J. sent 150 letters to parents of scouts and classmates asking for contributions to cover the cost of materials. He figured he needed $800, but people gave him $4,500. "I was just flabbergasted," he says. After finishing the project, he still had $3,800 left over. At first, he didn't know what to do with the money. Then he remembered that the school principal had told him that some families had a hard time paying tuition to the school. T.J. knew he could help again. He used the extra money to create a scholarship fund, which he named the Ira Hayes Soaring Eagle Scholarship Fund, to assist needy students. T.J. plans to keep the scholarship fund going by asking for new donations annually. "I can see myself as a 30-year-old going back to the mission every year," he says. Now, here are 6 cool Eagle Scout service projects. All Eagle Scout service projects are important, but no 2 are exactly alike. Here are 6 examples. Kaz Asajan, 15, from Troop 9 of Fresno, California. Kaz and his volunteers remodeled a chapel at Mount Ararat Cemetery in Fresno. They replaced doors, windows, and light fixtures. They also installed drywall and carpeting and rebuilt the bathrooms and air conditioning and heating systems. They finished the job by repainting the inside and outside of the chapel. The job cost $35,000. Pat Carr, 17, from Troop 47 of Menominee, Wisconsin. Pat and his guys built 28 benches for the stage at the Dunn County Fair. First, they took apart an existing bench and used it to make a pattern for the new benches. They engraved the names of other service organizations and local businesses that contributed money for the project on the backs of the benches. Now more people can sit and relax to watch the entertainment. Paul Doyle, 17, of Troop 5 of Picayune, Mississippi. Paul and his team repaired a deck over a bog at the Crosby Arboretum. An arboretum is like an outdoor museum that protects and displays trees and other plants. Paul's team replaced rotten boards and beams and secured planks that had popped out of place. They created a larger opening in the deck to give the trees more room to grow and gave the deck a good pressure wash. Fast-growing cypress trees were causing some of the damage by pushing the boards loose from underneath. Paul's guys cut back the troublesome cypress knee roots. Matt Glenn, 17, of Troop 23 of Bemidji, Minnesota. Matt and his crew built the 360-foot floating boardwalk at Rice Lake. 2 of the toughest parts of the project were getting all the lumber down a steep hill to the lakeside and making sure the new boardwalk was straight and level. Now visitors are able to use the boardwalk to access the lake to go fishing, harvest wild rice, and enjoy other recreational activities. Before Matt showed up, people had to tromp through a swampy area. Joseph Kane, 17, of Troop 603 of Pensacola, Florida. Joseph and his friends replaced mile markers and signs along a trail used by walkers and runners on Naval Air Station Pensacola. The trail had 10 signs that were supposed to describe different types of nearby trees and shrubs, but some signs were nowhere near the proper plants. Joseph installed new signs and made sure they were near the plants they described. And finally, Nicholas Long, 17, of Troop 493 of Virginia Beach, Virginia. Nicholas and his volunteers created a large sunlock at his old grade school, Allenton Elementary School, so the students there could learn how time was kept in ancient times. They laid colorful glass mosaic stepping stones in the ground, marking the months and hours. It's a human sundial. When students step on the proper month, their shadows point to the correct time. Nicholas got the plan from Scotland, but he had to plot his sun clock using the exact latitude and longitude coordinates for the school. When you think of dirty jobs, what kind of jobs come to your mind? Well, Mike Rowe, Eagle Scout and host of the Discovery Channel, let's read the article, Dirty Jobs, Does the Least Glamorous Work on Television. When Mike Rowe goes to the office, he gets his feet wet, his hands dirty, and the job done. As host of the Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs, Rowe has crisscrossed the country, trapping leeches, collecting owl vomit, recycling golf balls, and finding all sorts of jobs that leave him stinking filthy. As an Eagle Scout, he approaches each episode as he would a merit badge. I don't cheat, I try hard, and I actually do the work, he says. Of the 200 jobs Rowe has tried, these stand out as the dirtiest, most disgusting, most difficult of them all. Catfish noodler, the first one. Noodling is both a simple and insane way of catching catfish, says Rowe. Using this underwater, bare-handed style of fishing, Rowe and two other noodlers grope for holes in the lake's murky bottom and underneath clay banks and rocky crevices around the lake. They stuck their arms inside, hoping for a catfish to bite. If one did, they grabbed its jaw and yanked it out. Although Rowe successfully noodled a fish, it's a job we wouldn't do again. Catfish can weigh up to 100 pounds, and they have razor-sharp gill slits and lips like sandpaper. As a bonus, they usually hang out around snapping turtles, alligators, water moccasins, and other things that can mess you up permanently, says Rowe. Bat biologist. Wading through sticky ankle-deep droppings from 20 million bats, Rowe ventured into a cave to check the temperature and inspect the late-night flyers for disease. Flesh-eating beetles burrowed into his socks. Bats settled on his neck. The 110-degree air was toxic with ammonia. The experience was epic dirtiness. Rowe was helpful, cheerful, and brave, but not always clean. I sank to my waist in a vast, soupy ocean of bat poo. My predicament struck me as a preposterous way to perish, but not entirely without humor, he says. Truth is, dirty jobs isn't really about dirt. It's about people who understand the value of mixing laughter with labor. Waste analysis. The stench inside the trommel, a food separator device, makes Rowe's top 10 list of smelliest places. The machine acts like a giant mouth. Each day it chews 80 tons of rotting food into a green slop, which is taken to a power plant and converted into electricity. A tongue-like conveyor belt spits out recyclable items and trash. When the trommel stopped, Rowe became a human toothbrush. He crawled inside to scrape out the muck, just like cleaning a dirty mouth. The best way to imagine it is by shrinking down to a G.I. Joe side figure and walking into the mouth of a lion, Rowe says. Maggot farmer. Rowe visited the farm home to millions of maggots. The owners raise maggots, the larvae from bluebottle flies for bait. They dye them bright pink and ship them to fishermen around the world. Trays in the farm's growing rooms each contain 200,000 hungry little maggots that gobble 275 pounds of food each week. Rowe fed ground-up fish to the maggots. When they eat, maggots excrete ammonia, and the stink cuts through everything. The smell is incredible, Rowe says. We literally had to burn our clothes and leave everything there. The company that usually cleans our camera equipment sent it back. Septic tank technician. The pit, which prevents grease from clogging the city's sewer lines, ranks on Roe's list of smelliest places. He crawled down a manhole into a large room that contained tons of waste, including discarded school lunches. Mike helped stir the muck to keep it pumping through a hose and up to into a truck nicknamed the Honey Wagon. At other stops during the day, he pumped out sludge from sewers. "You get an eyeful and a noseful," he says. The thing that made it horrifying was that it was about 104 degrees. Casino food recycler. The farm's 2,500 swine love leftovers, and they get dump truck loads of them. Their owner picks up uneaten food like chicken and donuts from casino buffets. At the farm, Roe pawed through the stinking mound of slop, sorting out inedible items like silverware. He shoveled the food into a giant homemade cooker that looks like a medieval device, he says. It's a huge, amazingly disgusting pot. The cooker liquefies the leftovers into a protein-rich soup. The pigs go crazy for it and grow faster than any pigs on earth, Roe says. The farmer then sells them for food. It's the ultimate recycling, adds Roe. Bowie Bay Sox baseball groundskeeper. At the stadium of this Baltimore Orioles farm team, Roe did nothing you would want to do if you were a baseball fan. It's a minor league park, so everybody does everything, he says. He trimmed the grass, swept the dugout, washed players' uniforms, cleaned shoes, and muddled up baseballs to make them less slippery. I did try lots of fun things, too, Roe says. He suited up and learned how to properly slide into second base. A former professional opera singer, he sang the national anthem and then threw out the first pitch. Just another episode of good, clean, and dirty fun. Ostrich farmer. Roe calls the ostrich farm a good job, but a scary day. You're dealing with a totally jacked-up, hazardous Jurassic Park thing, he says. More people die from ostrich attacks than from shark attacks each year. Roe cleaned slimy water buckets, collected eggs, and wrangled the world's largest birds into a trailer. He avoided their kicks, which pack 500 pounds per square inch of force. On dirty jobs, there is nothing more important than the willingness to try and the ability to deal with failure. It's kind of that's the way life is, too, Roe says. He often fails in front of millions of viewers. That requires a measure of humility and curiosity that I believe my years in scouting helped develop. And now, the article, Scouts in Action, a true story. And here we have pictures of how these young couple, how they helped a couple caught in a rip current. It starts with Ben Torrey, 10, his brother Josh, 12, and other family members were on the shores of Panama City Beach, Florida, when Josh heard a woman screaming for help. Josh dived into the 5-foot waves and told Ben to follow him. The boys followed the sounds of the woman's screams, 75 yards offshore, where they came upon an elderly couple struggling against the rough waves. The man was unconscious. The boys put him on their board and pushed him back to shore. A bystander performed CPR on the man, but he died a few hours later in a hospital. The woman survived. Scout Benjamin Harry Torrey Top and his brother Joshua, a first-class scout, members of Troop 245, chartered to Forsyth Christian Home Educators, Cumming, Georgia, each received an honor medal with crossed palms for his actions. It is Scout's highest award for bravery. And here in the picture, it shows them in one picture how they both heard the screams, how they ran to the rescue. It shows them in the water helping out the young man, the older man and woman, and then receiving their medals. Good job, boys. And how about some homemade machines? This is page 7. Homemade machines get creative with things that go boom or fly and float and zoom. If you need to polish glass, just mix rubbing alcohol and water in a spray bottle. And wipe. When cleaning CDs, DVDs, or video games, use a Q-tip soaked with water to remove grime without scratching the disc. Pencil shavings make a great fire starter. Cut the tops off cereal boxes to create storage bins for magazines. Use a Sharpie marker instead of paint when building details on models. You will get a smoother look without brush strokes. To make a cool lantern, try putting glow sticks in a tennis ball can. If your digital camera or other electronic device gets wet, immediately remove the batteries and card. Place the device in a container, completely cover in uncooked rice, and close the container with a lid. Wait 24 hours and the water should come out. If you don't want to blind yourself in the dark, use a flashlight with a red bulb. When bike riding, wear rubber bands around your pant legs to keep them from getting caught in the chain and gears. Keep your model train running smoothly by wiping the tracks and wheels with rubbing alcohol. If you play wiffle ball, get extra bang in your bat by wrapping the sweet spot in duct tape. Save grass clippings from your lawn, let dry, and use them as a fire starter. When setting up a compass, speaker system, or anything that uses lots of wires, use twist ties to roll up loose wires and extra slack. This creates a tangle-free stereo system. Get more speed by spreading wax on the bottom of your sled. Salvage buttons before tossing an old or damaged scout uniform. They can always be used as replacements on your new uniform. If you need a laugh at school, use the Sunday newspaper comics section to cover your textbook. If you play guitar and have trouble finding your picks, keep them in an empty matchbox. When you sell popcorn, write a thank you note to your customers. They'll be more likely to buy from you again the next year, and it's also a nice thing to do. I customize my War Stars clone trooper action figures with model paint. I do it so they look like different clone trooper commanders rather than all the same. When making pasta, add a little olive oil to keep the noodles from sticking together. Collect dry sawdust or wood chips and put them in a paper egg carton. Then, with the parent's help, pour melted wax over it. Cut into 12 or 6 pieces and you'll have really great fire starters. Use a brown paper bag for a mounting on your model railroad. When your camera is running out of batteries, take them out, shake them up, and put them back in the opposite slots. You can get a few more shots before they run out for good. Put a damp tea bag on a cut to stop the bleeding. The tannic acid in the tea helps congeal the blood. And now we'll conclude with a few think and grin. Jokes sent in by you, the readers, and we'll share those. Nick, what do you get when you cross a giraffe and a scout? Mick, I haven't a clue. A person everyone looks up to. Rob, what do you call a potato that makes fun of you? Pat, beats me. Rob, a tater tot. And finally, Denver, why don't sharks eat clowns? Dallas, why? Denver, because they taste funny. Well, that's about all we have time now for. We have run out of time for today's episode of Boys Life. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long, till next time.